Hello, everybody, and welcome to the October question and answer session for Weekly Manga Recap. It's Larry Rott here alongside Rolo T. Chris, how's it going, man?
That's me.
That's you, man.
Yeah.
We're going to do a nice, relaxing little Q&A session that's not going to involve us pondering over bizarre questions or anything. We're just going to be nice and relaxed and not get weirded out by anything whatsoever.
Yeah, no, we're not gonna trail off in any weird tangents. We're gonna stay on topic. We're gonna answer questions in concise manners.
Mm-hmm. And then we're gonna have absurd reactions to anything, just to say cool and calm and collected, the way our viewers love listening to us.
And then we are going to end this podcast, of course, concisely under an hour. As we always, as always expected and appreciated.
One and two word answers only.
Yeah.
That's not how this is going to go at all.
No, not at all. Yeah. This is going to be all sorts of craziness, wackiness.
There's going to be one person who's tuning into a Q&A episode for the first time and be like, wow, these guys are acting very differently than they do during their regular episodes.
They're so professional. And then like five minutes in, they're like, oh, no, they're awful. Just awful.
They're even worse when they have to answer stuff from the audience.
But these are the episodes I really enjoy, getting to take questions and answers, and that's actually something we have for the first time this week, this month. We have answers, because it was brought in last time that we'd ask questions to our audience and read some of the answers on air. So we'll start off the podcast with that, I think. Just a couple of ones. So last month, I asked two questions. I asked, what were your favorite, favorite anime running songs, essentially, any songs do you think would be, like, good for running or things like that? And I actually got quite a lot of answers from that. Terrence Swift actually gave me quite a lot. No Pain, No Gain by Nanao and Shut Up and Explode by the Boom Boom Satellites, he suggested. And I thought both of those were great for it. And I also got one from Michael Hur who said Scab by Hidenori Chiwada, among many others. There were a lot of really good ones. Some people suggested that. I was like, I hadn't considered it before, like the original Digimon opening, Butterfly, I think it's called. That one was in there.
It's a nice, happy, positive, energetic one.
Yeah, and the second Ghost in the Shell opening, the one that's like partly in Russian, that one was actually kind of an interesting one too. I hadn't considered before, but it did work for it. So got a lot of really good ones for that. And I also asked what people would like to see, what matchups people would like to see in Trollo T trivia, if there was a any more of them. We had some interesting responses to that. Lion said he wanted to see Annalisa versus me in World Trigger. Loon Ranmayasha said he wanted to see you versus Jacob Chapman on Digimon, or you versus Linkara in Yu-Gi-Oh! Do you think you could win either of those?
I don't think I could win the Digimon one.
What if it was limited to just Series 1 Adventure?
Okay. Let me put it to you this way, Chris. One of us has spent dozens of hours making season recaps of that show, and one of us has not.
What if I created intentionally obscure and horseshit questions for the sole purpose, all with 50-50 chances, all for the sole
just
purpose
based
of just
entirely off
odds
of our commentary? Just based entirely off of our episode commentaries.
Yeah, like, I'm just like, which laser beam shooting bear? And you're like, Ubamon, or whatever his name was. That's all I do. And the last one, CVFPO suggested essentially like a podcast versus podcast one, where he said he'd like to see us go against the One Piece podcast, obviously, in One Piece trivia, which would be an interesting one. So I think all those are very cool ideas. If you want to see any of those, and particularly with an opponent you have in mind, you should let them know what the show is and see if they're interested. So yeah, we got some good questions. So do you have a question on your end to send to the audience this week or month? I don't know why I keep saying week.
I don't know. I don't have one yet.
I have one for you guys. This might be digging into the very obscure well of things I've done in the past, but for a very brief period of time, I had a blog, and I had a manga-related series on there called Inside the Coma. And in it, it was essentially just like a character spotlight thing centered specifically on the idea of highlighting side characters in manga that weren't the focal point, but that had really strong and interesting arcs. So, for example, I had oh, what's his name from Ice Shield 21? Yukimitsu. I don't want to call him Yuromitsu. Yukimitsu was there.
Yuromitsu.
Yeah, it's like a
word. You're such a mitsy.
Such a mitsy. I had him. I had, and I also, I think I did one on the dad, the father from Death Note. So I wanted to see what, to our audience, what are some of your favorite underrated characters? Now, when I say like underrated or side characters, I basically just mean they're not the focal point of the series. Like if there's a 5-man band, they aren't a part of that, essentially. Like the smaller smaller characters that make up a bigger piece. So send us some of your favorite suggestions for that. I'd be really curious to see what people's favorite side characters are.
Cool idea.
Boosh.
And of course we have questions for each other for this month. I will start us off.
Okay.
If you mind. It is of course October. And so I have a Halloween related question for you. It's actually a two-parter. What is your worst memory of someone scaring or trying to scare you for Halloween? And what is your best memory of scaring someone else? And I've got some stories that I can relate while you're trying to think of your answer.
Yeah, sure. Let me see if anything comes to mind.
My worst memory of being scared comes from when I was like 6 years old. Went trick-or-treating, and let's see, there was this guy who was dressed up like a clown, and he posed as a dummy with like the candy bowl like sitting in his lap.
Mm-hmm.
And there were like a whole bunch of other people hanging outside the house, and they were like, "Oh yeah, no, it's fine. Just go ahead and take some candy. Yeah, go ahead." And of course, as soon as I reached for it, it was, and I cried.
You like karate chopped him in the dick, like, ah! You're like, no.
I seriously actually like started crying because they had scared me. And I made my dad promise that he would never take me to that house ever again in the future.
You know what? I can actually relate to that story a lot because I couldn't think of an answer until you started telling it. I was like, oh my God, something like it just like came back to me all of a sudden, like I repressed it. When I must have been around the same age, like 6 or 7, my mom took me out trick-or-treating, and they went to the school that I went to, which was a Catholic school, so it had a convent in it where the nuns stayed. And we went into like this small room. I had never, for the 9+ years I went to that school, and, you know, the much longer time I'd even went to that church, I had figured I'd been everywhere in that building, but it was this room that I had never been to before and never went back to since. And there was a couple of nuns in there, and there was one just wearing, I can't visualize what the mask was, but it was really terrifying for what a nun would wear. And she didn't speak. She kind of like made like garbled noises. And like I had my Halloween pail, and she was essentially, I think, trying to like make a joke about trading with me. So she grabbed one of my like candy bars out of the bag and like held up like a fake rat instead. And there was just something about how terrifying she was. I was not playing along with it at all. I was like, just take the candy. Please don't kill me. I don't want the rat though. And it was,
yeah, you know, it's horrifying. That's one of those things that would be amusing to an adult, to some degree. He's like, oh yeah, I'll just give you this creepy rat instead. But yeah, to a child, when, you know, something looks weird like that, it just freaks you out.
Yeah, and the thing is, I don't think she talked during it. Like, I can't remember if she spoke in, like, grunts, or she tried to use, like, fake words, or just, like, a really low voice, but I don't remember her speaking. It was all just a very weird exchange that I was very uncomfortable with afterwards. Because eventually
maybe there was just a veil of terror surrounding your ears and blocking out all words.
It was easily, like, one of the weirdest encounters I had on Halloween.
Mm-hmm. My best memory of scaring someone else is actually when I did the exact same thing that scared me as a kid. The only difference is I wasn't dressed as a clown. I was dressed as like a skeleton. And I was saying, I was like, I don't know, around 20, I think.
Okay.
And my family was visiting some family friends. And so they had me sitting in the front yard with a candy bowl in my lap. And I was, you know, I had my head slumped over. And if it was older kids or teenagers, then I would, you know, sit still and pretend. And the best one I did was, you know, a couple of, you know, teenage girls came up and I just slammed my hand onto theirs when they reached for the candy bowl. But the thing that makes it truly memorable is that, you know, when it was a little kid, we agree like, yeah, don't scare the little kid, you know, don't surprise them like that, you know, make, alert them to the fact that, you know, you're alive and stuff. You know, wave your hand or stand up or whatever so you don't scare them too badly. And I was like, yeah, that sounds right. But this little girl came up. She was wearing her, you know, like, Princess Fairy costume or whatever. You know, this little, like, 4-5-year-old girl. And so I stood up immediately and, you know, held the candy bowl out. And she was still something like 20, 30 feet away. And she immediately starts screaming and runs to the car because, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, parents are so super protective of the kids these days that, you know, we'll have one person on the sidewalk with the child walking with them, and also I'll drive on the road, too.
That's so, a little extreme.
A little extreme. She immediately runs to the car her mom's driving and goes in to dive into the back seat.
Oh, like it was an action movie. Like, she's like, open the door! Don't break! Just open the door!
And it was like, but before she even got in, I had, like, even taken my mask off, and I was like, it's okay.
I just wanted to give you Mounds bars. She's like, oh, that's even worse.
No, bad candy.
She's like garbage candy from a scary man.
Oh,
I don't remember scaring too many people on Halloween, but I do have a memory of, I was in Cub Scouts. And we were doing a Cub Scout Halloween, like, get together at the gym at my school where our Cub Scout, group essentially was centered from. So we were the group in charge of essentially, like, putting together the festivity for it. So we decided to do a haunted house. And what we did was we basically made it so all of us would be in the locker room. There was, two locker rooms in the gym. The boys and the girls, and then there was a tunnel that essentially connected the two of them, so people would go in through the boys' locker room, go through the tunnel, then into the girls' locker room. And I was essentially just somebody in a black, like, tattered robes, and I was supposed to act like I was, like, kind of, like, shackled to a wall, and then when people came by, I'd be like, "Bah!" And most people were scared. A couple of, like, the older kids were like, yeah, real scary, whatever. But we had to, like, be introduced before it started, and most people weren't in their costumes. However, because of the mask I was wearing, you would be able to see the white of my skin in between the eye holes. So my mom's idea was to put black makeup around my eyes first so that you wouldn't see my eyes under the mask.
Sure.
Unfortunately, since I went up before the costume was on, I just went up with black makeup around my eyes and everyone just assumed I had been horrifically beaten that day. And I feel like someone pulled me aside afterwards and be like, son, is everything okay? I'm like, no, it's just makeup for a Halloween costume, I swear.
So, like, you gave them real terror.
They're like, we know your dad is around a whole lot. Did he come by? I'm like, no, he's not an abusive dad, he's just a deadbeat. It's different.
Did you say beat?
He'll be at the next Cub Scout father-son trip. He promised this time. I swear. He said his word is his bond, and his word will follow me wherever I go. So he's definitely going to be there. I'm not going to have to go with somebody else's dad like last time, or my
Chris,
uncle,
this
like
be the
time before that.
Chris, this is supposed to be stories of how you scared someone, not how you depressed me.
It's kind of scary. It's kind of dark, right?
It's scary how you lose faith in humanity! What's your question for me?
It's going to sound really weird coming against that. But Nick, who are your favorite comedians? What say you?
Completely unrelated.
Not related to Halloween, to that question, to the tone, anything.
I love Patton Oswalt. I think that he is an incredibly hilarious and wonderfully geeky guy. Let's see. I liked Dave Chappelle a bit when I was younger, but of course he doesn't really do anything anymore.
I saw him do stand-up within the past year, and he was incredible.
Yeah, I mean, he's still really funny. It's just that, you know, he kind of got much more reclusive.
Yeah, he doesn't do television, doesn't do specials. It's just basically you see him on tour, which he only does in, like, the upper northeast, essentially, now. Like, in obscure areas, too. Like, he did a show in PA. It wasn't at fucking Pittsburgh or Philadelphia. It was in Hershey. So,
One of my favorite guys still to watch, even though, of course, he's passed for a few years, is Robin Williams. Mm. He is an incredibly entertaining stand-up guy.
It's weird. I've always loved Robin Williams. I can't think if I've actually ever seen, like, a special of his. I know I've seen clips. Like, I remember Comedy Central had a special one time that was, like, the top 100 comedians of all time. This is done back in, like, the early 2000s, and I remember they had them there. He was on that, but I've never actually seen any of his, like, long-form stand-up before. I really like Eddie Izzard. He's one of the few comedians I've seen live. He's great. Dave Chappelle, I still think today, is, like, pound for pound the best comic out there. I don't think anyone's funnier than he. Right now, I still love it, Louis C.K., although some of his specials have gotten a little preachy. One of my favorite new guys is Big J. Okerson. If you're into, like, kind of more, I don't want to say, like, filthy humor or things like that, but he's just, he's crude, but in a funny way. He has really sharp wit, too, and just an insanely hilarious guy. And I actually have, I've started to come around on John Mulaney. I used to, my first exposure to him was his Fox show, which I didn't like at all. But then I started watching his specials, and almost all of them have made me laugh really hard. So I think he's actually a guy I'm really enjoying more and more.
Okay, cool.
There you go. So with that ado, that's not the phrase, but with that's that not with that ado, let's get to the Q&As.
If you say more confidently, then it'll sound proper.
With that ado to the Q&As.
With that ado.
With that dot 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 ado.
Ado. Do you want to start off for me?
I can start off. So this is a question from... Actually, didn't put his name here, so we'll just start with... Dear Nick Dother, why did you eat the coffin, Apple Freeman, and Chris Kathleen, why did you eat the glowing cave moss, Larius?
I don't remember if Kathleen actually ate the cave moss.
I know a lot of us ate the cave moss. For those of you who are confused what's happening, these are references to the Wormwood D&D campaign me and Nick, along with quite a few other people, played in back in the day, where we had quite a few very stupid moments, including Dother eating an apple found in a coffin, just because you were so exasperated at the time, I believe.
I had been experiencing visions and of an apple, I think. And of, like, vampirism and stuff. So after we killed the vampire, I found an apple in his coffin. I was like, I eat that apple and proclaim my dominance. And Jason was like, are you sure? And I was like, oh, shit. Roll a fortitude save. And I rolled, like, a one.
I feel like all of us were
like...
He's
like, well, you're cursed now.
I feel like all of us were like, why did you eat the apple? Like, all of us were...
I've been through mental taxation.
His questions
people drew,
are...
People drew some amazing fan art of that. I've been going...
The fan art and everything that came from... I still have the Kathleen plushie I got from that. It was some really awesome stuff that came from that.
Those are sitting over on my bookshelf. There is.
Yeah. So his question, during the Make Q&A, Chris mentioned that listening to the Rooster Teeth podcast. I was wondering if either of you currently watch or used to watch any of their other shows like Red vs. Blue, Ruby, or seen any of their newer stuff like Camp Camp, Day 5, Immersion, etc.
I stopped watching Red vs. Blue fucking years ago. It wasn't... I don't know. I don't think it was that I got, like, sick of it or anything. I think that they went on a season break... And then I didn't start watching it again when it started back up. I think that was it.
I
drop off on a lot of series that way. So.
I have vivid memories of Red versus Blue. Back in the day.
It was a funny goddamn series.
Back in the day when I had dial-up internet still. I caught up on the entire... I watched the entire series through YouTube, and I have vivid memories of loading up an episode. And that's when fucking... You know, a YouTube video of 5 minutes long took, like, an hour to download. So I can remember clicking play and getting to, like, listen to, you know, 20 seconds of the video and then having to pause and, like, wait 20 minutes for the, like, more of it to buffer and then going back and going through it again. Essentially getting, like, Red versus Blue episodes in, like, 30-minute chunks just because I was so impatient. And that first day I had cable, my mom finally got, like, fiber optic, I remember the first thing I watched was a new Red vs. Blue episode I hadn't seen yet, because I was like, good, I can, like, it's blowing my mind, I can watch this in, like, 10 seconds, it's all, like, downloaded, it's so great, but, I watched Red vs. Blue, I don't still follow up with it, I watched it up until what I thought was the end, there was this, essentially, I think it was, like, episode 100, which had, like, three different endings to it, like, Clue, and I just thought that was the end of the series. Until I, like, later found out there's a thing called, like, Reconstruction, which was, like, the continuation of it. And I guess it was just a weird place to come into, because it wasn't, like, there weren't jokes, and it wasn't about the same characters. I think it was, like, a thing in between seasons. And I was just like, I don't really care for this so much. I've heard it's actually really great now with a lot of the same comedy and everything like that, but I just, it's one of those things where I don't want to go back and have to watch through everything again. So, but the original, like, 100 episodes I thought were hysterical. There's still things in that I quote to this day. And as for the other stuff, I don't watch too much of it. I know Ruby is coming out in the manga form and actually going to be in the US Jump magazine coming very soon, actually. They announced that at New York Comic Con. So if people like Ruby, you'll be able to get the comic version in your Jump subscription very soon.
There's also a follow-up question. Do you have any favorite jokes or moments from the series?
I don't know why. I feel like one of the ones I remember the most is when Tucker says something like, yeah, and I'm black. And Church just like, you're black? Yeah. Like, it's not like it's a big deal. I just, you know, you never mentioned it before. I didn't think you were black. Like, it's just like the social awkwardness of Church being like, I just didn't think you were black. I don't know why. It's blowing my mind. But, maybe the favorite joke I have from it is the second episode where it's, Sarge explained to Warthog and it's like, then look at it. It has tusks. What other animal has tusks? A walrus, sir? Griff, what did I tell you about making up animals? And then just like the stinger. It's like, want to make up any more animals? The Sasquatch? How about we call it a Yeti? Hey, Simmons, what's that Mexican goat monster that eats all the goats? Chupacabra, sir? Yeah, hey, Griff, Chupa thingy. How that sound?
I think that I don't know if it's my favorite joke, but it's definitely the one that I remember the most vividly is when, they're trying to get the bomb and only Caboose can carry it. And Sarge is giving him advice. And he's like, no, no, don't use your legs. The back is the strongest muscle in your body.
Oh man. It's a really funny show. If you've never checked it out, watching it from, like, episode one and going on from there is a good plan. There's some really great...
It was honestly a pioneering series at the time.
Like, oh, yeah.
Machinima's no big thing, but 10 years ago, they were doing freaking groundbreaking stuff. Mm. I think they were actually so big at the time that they did... I think that Bungie contacted them and had them do a bit of a trailer for Halo 2, introducing some of the changes and stuff, and they made it all, you know, a joke on how everything was more balanced, which meant that the weapons that the army had been sent were much less effective than the ones they had before.
There were a lot of that. You could actually, they had a cameo in Halo 3, too. You could find some of the characters, like, pounding on the door in one of the levels. And if you walked by, you could hear, like, they'd had, like, small quotes or things like that. A lot of little Easter eggs from that. There's also an unrelated follow-up from that altogether.
Is. The Straw Hats are all D&D classes. Assign them all one. You don't need to worry about alignments because no one cares about those anyways except for clerics and paladins. You can use any edition of D&D for this answer. Honestly, this isn't too difficult a question to answer.
Like, Luffy'd be a warrior. Zoro would be some kind of samurai. I'm pretty sure that's an archetype of some class. Nami'd be a rogue. Usopp would be a ranger. Sanji would be a monk. Frankie would be like an artificer. Chopper would be a cleric. Brooke would be a bard.
Actually, I think Chopper would be a druid because of his animal transformations.
That's true. I couldn't think of anything for Robin. I had notes taken of this originally, but I couldn't think of something for Robin.
I would think that she would be a wizard.
Wizard? It makes sense. I could see that. But, those are the questions from Jason Dariano, so thank you very much.
Okay, yeah. Your turn.
I did the last one.
No, I just did that.
No, you just jumped in and started reading the question for me at one point.
Fuck. You're right.
Like a rude little piggy.
Okay, this is from Thank You Base James. I'm writing this email on Father's Day, and I'm spending this holiday in my usual manner, dwelling on my anger and resentment towards my own dad. In that spirit, what do you think? Who do you think is the worst dad in manga or anime? Personally, I vote Kaito Wanijima from Air Gear. And I have the context on that now. Yay! What wonderful timing. But I'm going to go with... Oh, gosh, what is his name? I don't actually know the character's name. But a few years ago for Red Right to Left, I did a series called Marmalade Boy. And I went on this long rant about all of the parents and how awful they were to their kids for hiding this horrible secret from them. Well, not a horrible secret, but the secret that it ended up torturing them. And then they had kept it a secret from them for no reason. And Yoji is the character's name, Yu's father. Who ended up slapping his son because how could you keep this from us when they had just kept something much worse from their kids? So, fuck those parents altogether.
I can understand that. I tried to stay away from just the ones that are, like, obviously the dad marrying their daughter, having that kind of connection to them when they got older. And I can't remember this character's name, but it's the father from FMA. I always thought was kind of a dickhead. But then again, I haven't...
Oh,
Hohenheim or whatever. I haven't reread the series in a while, so some of my details are kind of foggy on that, but he's one that kind of sticks out to me from what I remember, because he kind of shows up at the end as like, I couldn't be around for, you know, big reasons, but still like, you couldn't even like send him a message or something?
Nope.
You're a jerk.
At least Edward's, you know, treats him the way that he should be treated, though.
Yeah, that's actually, I think, what's important to it, is that he gets his fair comeuppance, but, yeah, unfortunately, I took some notes on this one, but I don't have them with me, unfortunately.
We're getting suggestions for, like, Dragon, Judge. It's like, well, but Judge, you were supposed to hate him.
Yeah, I assume it's the worst dad in the sense that they were, like, a shitty parent. I mean, I guess that's what Judge would count as. But I guess if you're almost thinking more along the lines of, like, someone you're not in... Someone who's intended to be portrayed as at least a neutral party as a father or something like that.
Yeah. Like, the example of Kaito is like, no, we're supposed to think that he did it all for a good reason.
Yeah, like, that's pretty... It's pretty messed up.
Yeah. Second, I recently read a manga series called Blaster Knuckle. The premise is that it's 1880s America. The KKK are really flesh-eating demons who prey on blacks. And my people's only hope is Victor Freeman. A man who looks like the love child of Ron Simmons and Gus from Berserk, who punched fucks them to death with his custom-made shotgun gauntlet. That is one of the most wonderfully vivid descriptions I have ever heard. That's great. That's great.
I need to use the term punch fucks them to death.
Punch fucks them to death.
I'm going to see if I could squeeze it into a work email tomorrow.
Base James says, if I could adapt one manga into a movie or TV show for American audiences, this would be it. So... what manga would you choose to adapt into a movie or TV show for an American audience? Honestly, I think it's already happened. I think that Afro Samurai is basically, you know, along the same lines as that. It would probably not have worked without, you know, Spike just being like, hey, Samuel Jackson, you want to come to this Afro Samurai guy? God, that is a completely ridiculous fucking series, by the way.
I did see that one, actually. That was one of those, like, I have a lot of disposable income at this point in time, so I'm just going to pick this up on a whim purchases. I have one that's... I think it would be a great TV series, would be Death Note. It's currently actually getting a Netflix movie, which I don't like as much, but I think, like, a TV show version of Death Note could actually work really, really well, because it has a lot of those moments that are huge that would be perfect cliffhangers for, like, an hour-long television show... Which is not too, because there's also a lot of dialogue and explaining and things like that that has to go on. So
yeah, Netflix original series type of thing.
I think that would be a brilliant series for Netflix. I wish they were doing it as a series instead of a movie, because I think that would be one, especially because if you're doing it live action, this way you'd be able to get people into a series that's, you know, an anime or manga, but they aren't turned off on it because it looks like an anime or a manga. Like, I have a lot of family members who I know would really dig One Piece, but they just won't read it. Won't even give it a try because it's, you know, an anime or a manga and they think that's just silly. But I think that's one that would really hit hard with audiences.
If I recall the Japanese live-action Death Note films, they're just like, fuck it, L wins again.
I watched the first one, which ends like in a very... It essentially covers up to when they kill... When Light kills that one FBI agent early on, that female FBI agent.
Hmm.
And then...
What an awkward moment to leave off on.
Well, it ends with L and Light meeting each other for the first time, but that's what the majority of the first film takes place against. It's not entirely beat for beat what happens in the manga, but that's essentially the same kind of character they put in there, and that's how it basically goes through, is Light finally gets the one up on her, and then him and L finally meet, and that's the close of the movie. I took my sister to see that, and because she had read some of the manga and really liked it. She did not enjoy the movie, and did not enjoy the experience of being in a movie theater with a bunch of cosplayers. Her comment to this day is still like, why are they asking for their autographs? That's not actually L or Light. Those are just people dressed up as them.
I've never understood that. I've also never understood people who do panels and answer questions in character when they're just cosplayers. I don't get it. I'm just gonna say I don't get it and leave it at that.
Fair enough.
Finally, for Chris, I've started exercising recently because diabetes and shit, and I've come to appreciate the importance of a good workout playlist. So this is on the same lines as the question that you asked our audience. Given their personalities, what kind of music do you think the characters from My Hero Academia have on their workout playlists? For example, Bakugo is a bit of an angry dick, so I envision him listening to a lot of really hardcore gangster rap and doom metal, while Uraraka looks like one of those chicks that's into, like, indie country, so she'll have a lot of Sturgill Simpson?
I have no idea.
And Father John Misty in her iPod.
I would assume, actually, I don't know why, I just figured Bakugo would be more into, like, heavier metal. Like, not necessarily, like, speed metal or something like that, but just into, like, heavy rock metal, almost, like, a little bit less lame than WWE metal. If I phrase it in one way, but, like, I could see a lot of Metallica on there,
So WWE now.
Well, yeah, like Rise Against, but also
Fame.
I don't know if WWE ever used a whole lot of Metallica.
For a few Triple H WrestleMania matches.
Motorhead. Yeah, it would be a lot of WWE stuff. I'm just trying not to like get caught into like the Breaking Benjamin shit got into. Uraraka, I'd actually imagine be into like pop and things like that.
I
could see her into like the big pop list.
Tokoyami would listen to Hans Zimmer soundtracks.
Tokoyami. Why that? I'd assume he'd be into like the fucking emo band shit. Like he'd be like
because Hans Zimmer scored those Nolan films, Chris.
Yeah, but I feel like he'd be into like yeah, I could see that.
It's Batman, Chris.
I just feel like he'd be really into, like, My Chemical Romance or all those, like, edgy emo 20th century bands. Like,
Bullet for My Valentine.
He loves Fall Out Boy, fucking loves them. Panic at the Disco, he feels, is underrated by everybody. And I assume that Ida would just listen to, like, straight Mozart or just, like, other, like, equatable, like, early century, no thrills. Or he's just into, like, really shitty, like, bland music of today. Like, he's like...
Like, Will Smith raps.
Or he's like, I love Two Live Crew. Like, really? They're, like, the filthiest band out there. He's like, yes, well, I'm business up front and then party in my room when I'm jamming out to a song called, like, Monster Pussy or something. I'm like, wow, I didn't see this at all from you.
I really like Insane Clown Posse.
Oh, yeah, he's like, I dress up. I'm a juggalo. I'm like, wow.
I go to the gathering of the juggalos each year.
Didn't see you. At all, Ida?
This is a side of you I wish that I didn't know about still.
He's like, do you still think I'm so uptight now? I'm like, actually, still, yeah, but I just question your taste in music more than anything. All right, move on to the next person here. Mm-hmm. This is from the unofficial Osamu Kumu fan club member number 72. Dear Nick, Mr. Proresu, and Chris, the standard bearer of future generations. Surprisingly, my question is about wrestling and how tropes in it cross over into shonen manga. What stories have you read that felt like a wrestling plot? aka Underdog, overcomes great odds like Daniel Bryan versus the Authority and Luffy in the Impel Down arc.
Anytime that you've got someone who is opposed to an organization that is technically on the same side as them, you know, like...
Central.
Yeah, exactly. Central or... that's a very pro-wrestling thing. You know, Central is overseeing all these students, but they've got rebellious students who are working against them. Or a bit, to a lesser extent, the central branch of Border, mm-hmm. and how they've been causing trouble for Osamu and Tamakum too. Like that's a very, very mild example. But yeah, anything that is, you know, like the rebellious person against an authority organization, that's very reminiscent of professional wrestling. It's been essentially the standard of all major wrestling storylines since the late 90s.
I could see that. I'm trying to think of like a specific example that comes to mind. You know what that actually kind of worked is the injury storyline. In Ice Shield 21, it was like their way to build up Gao as this big beast by having him essentially cripple Kid right before the final match.
He put people in the Hall of Pain.
Yeah, and it was a way of being like, oh, hey, I love this wrestler. Oh, he just got fucking fed to this new guy so that he could be a bigger opposition for the next match. So that's one that kind of felt a little bit like that, where you
Gao was very monster heel. And then, of course, as soon as he got beaten once, he turned face and wasn't nearly as good.
Tried to be still as intimidating and cool, and it's like, eh, you're not as cool when you get fucking clowned by some dude who can do like a three triangle block thing against you and kicked your ass.
It did the job. Put over that Chubo kid. That'll help him get over with the fans.
I fucking gave that kid the torch and he just couldn't
carry
it.
Gave him the rub.
Oh my god, it's like fucking Hulk Hogan and Ultimate Warrior.
Gao's retired in Tampa, still talking about how he put Chubo over one time.
And he couldn't get over on his own, though, man, brother.
Let me tell you something, brother.
I gave that kid the biggest rub there was, and I told Shonen Jump Suisha, this kid's not going to be able to do it, brother. But like, they went ahead, and I did my job, but no one's going to be as good as me. So there we go.
And heel face turns, or, you know.
Yeah, they're all over the place. I think we've even done ones on that specific question.
Okay. This one comes from Gottfried Schild Eilt, and I'm sure that I mispronounced that, so I apologize. There's actually a question later on that jokes about our horrible inability to pronounce names. Dear Mr. and Mrs. Manga Recap, nice. Firstly, have you read the short spin-off gag manga Boku no Hero Academia Smash? I have not. Would you consider doing so? Probably, maybe, I don't know.
At some point, possibly.
Possibly. Secondly, if you could change one thing in history that isn't Second World War related, what would it be? I like how they just, say, no, you can't kill Hitler right away.
Conan O'Brien losing the Tonight Show.
Oh.
It's the entire Super Larry's Brothers podcast right through the internet. You can only do one. You can stop 9/11 or Conan O'Brien gets to keep the Tonight Show. I mean, it's tough because like, there's a lot of stuff you'd want to be able to go back and prevent if you could, but try not to. Like, I feel like that's a question like an answer everyone would say. And I also try to keep it in recent memory because then it's like the butterfly effect. Like, oh, I've changed that. Yeah. Who knows what's going to happen? So if I were to say anything,
I would change it to just like a personal financial decision that I made a few years ago. I'm not going to go into details about it, but I would have saved myself a few $1,000 if I had not done something. And the rest of my life would be pretty much unchanged, except that some changes would be for the better. Like, it wouldn't change, I don't think, any of my personal relations with people. So I feel comfortable that I would change that.
So you had to make it all personal now.
I had to make it personal because, you know, you don't know how the fuck a whole bunch of other stuff is going to change when you change stuff. Like, if you stop Donald Trump from ever running for president, imagine how different the world would be right now. now.
I know. We'd have, like, a competent political party. We'd have a race with viable candidates, potentially. I see. The only way... I'm sorry, Nick. If I had to change one thing, it'd be like, I don't know, maybe go back in time and help my mom not have her stroke. I don't know what else to say. I don't want to be depressing, but that's the only thing I can think of that if I had to, I'd probably go back and change.
Yeah, you know, whenever you have that kind of power, it's very tempting to make it all about yourself.
Yeah. But no, I mean, honestly, the Conan O'Brien Tonight Show. That's my number one thing. That's my number one goal. Just keep the Tonight Show. That's the other person I wanted to mention. I forgot what I was talking about stand-ups.
About stand-up, yeah.
Norm MacDonald is hysterical, but he is the definition of a comedian's comedian, because most times if people watch him, they'll be like, this dude's awful. He's not funny at all. But you have to, like, get the joke behind the joke. And my favorite things are his Conan O'Brien visits, because every time he'll go in and just do the cheesiest, most hackney fucking jokes, and you just see Conan O'Brien losing it more and more every time as it happens. The absolute best is when he goes on and tells, like, a moth joke for, like, 8 minutes.
The moth joke is
it's
fucking hilarious.
Beyond brilliant. It's an 8 minute joke with the dumbest, most fucking obvious punchline in the world. But it's so
funny when he's telling it, though.
It's so great.
Just the way that he's telling it is so fucking funny.
He's great. He just actually was back on Conan recently. That's why it's in my mind, because he had a couple more bits that are in there that are just hysterical. But
great. I don't know what to do with my wife, and
and I'm sad. My son doesn't talk to me anymore. It's like, man, you sound like you have a real big issue. Why did you come to the podiatrist's office?
Because the light was on.
And just, like, Conan's face of just, like, God, fuck it. Because he knows it's coming, too. Just, like, God damn it. He was great on the roast of Bob Saget, too, because he came up. He was just, like, reading a newspaper during everyone else's bits. And then he goes up and just does the shittiest thing. He's like, Bob Saget, I know you're a vegetarian, but I think you're full of baloney. And it's just, like... Like, everyone who doesn't get it's just gonna be like, that's a fucking garbage joke. But if you get it, you're just like, God damn it, I love you, Norm MacDonald.
Who the fuck is that one bitch who was on the most recent roast?
Ann Coulter.
Yeah, she would just, I'm sure she would just be like, this guy's not funny at all.
He was on.
Everyone else around her is like,
He was on, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? And they were doing, like, a celebrity edition.
Seriously?
Yeah, they were doing a celebrity edition.
I know that they've done Celebrity Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
This was when it was huge, though. This is when it was still Regis Philbin doing it, like, prime time, like, Wednesday night or whatever. And it was, like, a week long, and everyone would get to go, and you were playing for charity. And whatever reason, he would lose every single, the test, like, whoever answered the questions in the correct order fastest would get to go up. He lost every single one of them, so he's the last person to go up. I think it's like the second last one that he's doing, and like the contestant's up there, and he just interrupts like Regis talking. He's like, hey Regis, is this supposed to be plugged in? As he just holds up with presumably the power cable for his terminal. But then he goes up there and he gets to the $1 million question. And he almost wins! Essentially, Regis Philbin scares him out of answering, and he had the right answer! It's insane! It's so easy.
Because he's actually pretty damn smart.
He's brilliant! He's also he has a real gambling problem too, but, like, he's brilliant, but it's he's just great in everything. Where were we?
You went on a tangent about comedians you like because you got talking about Conan.
I'm so sorry. I promised at the start of this it wouldn't happen.
You've got to ask questions that are from Castor UK now. I'm so glad that you got this question because it's about pronouncing names.
Oh, I'm going to nail all of these. From Castor UK. Dear Y-Roller of Tim, the Enchanter, and Rollo T... Earl Grey, preferably. One milk. One sugar. Oh, thank you. So after 5 months of hiding from Nick's wrath, I thought it might be safe to send some questions again. In the past, you've had trouble pronouncing even simple names in series and had the chat yell at you for it. Like, a lot. Which I think is very unfair, considering how they're not in your native language. Therefore, I thought I'd give you a chance to prove your lingual dexterity live on air by asking you to pronounce these actual British names for your, from your native English. So, question one here. Eric Cholmondeley from Loughborough. Simple enough. I don't know how bad that one was. Rhys Manfwy from... it's Welsh, that's why. Echelton? And, oh god. Leon Tolmache. Oh wait, hold on. Both parts of the double-barred surname pronounced differently. Tolmache Tolomeche.
Now, you can feel free to scroll down.
Okay, so...
That gets thrown at you, though. Now you can prove your pronunciations were perfect, even to the dropped T's of the Cockney accent you're undoubtedly reading them in.
I only did the beginning in a Cockney accent. Eric Chumley, did I get that right? No.
No, you didn't.
Loughborough.
That was the closest one to you.
Rhys Mivanwy. Oh, no, I wasn't close to that at all. Well, I got Rhys of Eyeshaltoon. And Leon Tolmache. I got the first part of Tolmash.
No, it's Leon Tolmache Tolmash.
Oh, Tolmache. Well, I pronounce the E extra hard because I know that's important to them. Even though he specified right there that it's not pronounced. Anyway, he also has another question here. When you read this, you may remember back to the distant past of 2016. Hero seemingly killed off Gajeel only to bring him back after 2 weeks. This has left many people annoyed at him not being dead, or him being brought back so soon, or even being brought back so boringly. My question is, in a medium like Shonen, where heroes returning from death can tend to be not just a possibility, but inevitability, how long do you think is long enough for them to stay dead without their death or return losing the impact in terms of story itself, or the times the readers have to wait?
At least a year. At least a year.
I don't know if it necessarily is something so... scientific to it. I just think you need time for an actual weight to be developed from their death. Like, if they're gonna come back, that's fine, but if it's something that happens within a week or something like that, then who cares? Like, it doesn't mean anything, but like, say if right now, Jiro from Toriko came back, I think that would actually be fine. It's only been like 4 months since he died, but when he died, it felt like there was an actual weight and consequence to the story, as opposed to, say, when, Gajeel came back, like, the next week, or when Juvia came back,
or when Brandish came back.
Yeah, like...
Or when Wendy came back, or when Brandish came back.
Yeah, like, it's just a sense of, like...
Or when Dee Maria came back, when Lucy came back.
Yeah, like, you gotta give it enough time for at least some weight to be developed from it, or some kind of feeling in the world that a loss was actually had. Like, if it's something at the end of a chapter, then, I'm not gonna buy it, especially if your series already has a, known issue with doing that. It was a problem I actually had with One Piece for a while, where they do these things where it seemed like a bunch of characters just did a big self-sacrifice, but this was back at the time when One Piece never killed characters, so it was just like, I don't buy it. And eventually that started to actually become a detriment of the series. Like, I remember when it was, like, Polly, the Frankie family, and, like, everyone else looked like they fell into an enormous abyss at Enies Lobby during the escape. I sat there and was like, none of them are dead. So this doesn't mean anything. Like, I don't feel anything from this because I know they're all alive. So it just helps when there's a little bit of separation that you're able to actually digest that the death happened.
Right. Yeah, that sums it up for me.
I think that's...
Jiro died 24 chapters ago.
Okay.
So, about half a year.
Yeah.
And there's also one more question about Naruto.
As a callback to the old How You'd Fix Naruto episode, how would you fix the current Bolt manga if possible? Or at least make Bolt a sympathetic character and relatable, so I can actually get through a chapter in one go.
I don't know if the point is to make Bolt a sympathetic character.
I think it's actually fine keeping him as is. I would just give the rest of the cast some more spotlight. since we already had an entire side story devoted to making Sarada a likable character, that's fine. Like, I don't need necessarily anything for her, though I'd like for her to do a little bit more. But, like, the weird kid, Mitsuki. Like, I don't know shit about him.
He did get a side manga, but it was just his origin.
Yeah, like, I need more, I kind of want more from him now and things like that. Or even, like, just members of the side cast in general. Like, Konohamaru is their instructor, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I kind of like a little from him. It's just, I don't necessarily say there's one thing I do to fix the series, because I don't actually think Boruto is that bad to begin with.
I don't think it is.
If it's just
it's only like, what, 4 chapters old?
4 or 5 or so, yeah, about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you're talking just in terms of fixing Boruto the character, I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with them because they're doing something different this time around, and I don't know if he's necessarily supposed to be likable at the start. It's kind of like Luke from Tales of the Abyss, if you ever played that. He is an unlikable shithead at the start of the series, and then like halfway through the game, he's been humbled so much that he becomes a likable character, and that's the story it's telling.
All right, as if to make up for criticism of inability to pronounce British names, our next one comes from Tropical Blitz, who spends the entire email bemoaning the Brexit decision. So.
That's how fucking up-to-date we are on podcast emails. The Brexit is a topical pop discussion in our emails.
Hello, guys. This is Tropical. The British are applied on this earth and stupid to boot Blitz.
The next email's going to be like, did you guys hear Donald Trump's the frontrunner for the Republican nomination?
Hello, Nick. Why, oh my God, you guys, seriously, this nation is full of idiots streaming. And hello, Chris. Jesus Christ, why, bloody hell, the pound has fallen to like 1,700 to the United States dollar, you guys. Why, Larios? Oh, God. Here's some questions. With the release of actual commercial VR, have you ever wanted to get one of those headsets and try them out? I know they're currently expensive, but honestly, I've been considering now just getting one to escape from this cold, harsh, unreasonable reality. Honestly, it's never really, when I was a kid, VR did fascinate me, but honestly, nowadays, it's like, it just seems very gimmicky to me.
It's hard for me to separate myself from the mindset of all virtual reality being like the virtual boy. Like, I just always assume that's what it is. I know it's a lot better now. I've never had an inkling to really try it. The closest I've seen to it is watching an Impractical Joker's Punishment that used it that I thought was funny, but that's it. Otherwise, I've not really seen it or have any real interest in using
it. What was the punishment?
Have you watched the show at all?
No.
Okay. One of the guys is known for being very easily scared, so they put him in they gave him the virtual reality headset and had him play this horror game where he's like in a room with two dolls on the couch. But the joke is that as he's playing the game, they're tearing down the room around him and setting up an exact replica of from the game. And then they have two girls dressed in the outfits of the monsters in the game to come out and scare him after he gets out, after he takes the game off. So he's already screaming and shouting from the game. Then he takes it off and he's like, "Oh, you sons of bitches!" And the two little girls come out and start jumping towards him. He's like, "I know you're actresses." He's holding his stool up like a lion tamer. Like, "I know you're actresses, but I will hit you." And the one's like, "Dude, you're 40. He's like, "Shut the fuck up."
That is impractical.
That's a great one.
Question 2. We have all been let down by someone in our lives at some point, but have you ever felt like you were betrayed by a nation you once held in high regards? Honestly, the fact that Donald Trump still is expected to get like 42% of the popular vote does depress me.
Yeah, I think there was a point in my life where I was like the wide-eyed idealism of essentially of like a patriot. Like, I remember my favorite quote for a while was the Patrick Henry quote, like, I have but one life to give for my country. Really, like, douchey in retrospect, I feel like, because I didn't know actually that much about my country. But yeah, there's just a realism you get as you get older where you're like, oh, these aren't. This doesn't work like I thought it did, or, oh, that's kind of shitty, or, yeah.
Well, when everyone gets one vote, then sometimes dumbasses have just as much of a voice as actual people.
Yeah. Mm. Or like, oh, hey, our votes don't actually matter because the Electoral College could just be like, nah, I'm going to vote for someone else.
Yeah, fuck this. Question three. Hey, I've been hearing some rumbling that you over at the U.S. are looking to maybe be adding Puerto Rico as a new state, and even D.C., even a moon state. Do you have room for another remote piece of rock? An island, if you will? Like, you know, having a parent who made a mistake moving to live with their kid? U.K., U.S., we go back, right?
We're still cool, right?
Question four. I know you guys don't watch much football, soccer, though I think Chris might still be watching women's volleyball or beach volleyball. Regardless, could you guys cheer against any English team in any sport you guys watch? We came to the realization that really they don't deserve anything. You got it, buddy.
You do that for you anytime. By the way, this women's...
also the email is titled "Go Iceland."
Wow, so those are some dark times. Questions here from Christopher Chow. Says, "Dear Nick, remembrance of death and finality Freeman, and Chris, overseer of the insignificant and stagnation Larios." Some pretty badass titles there. Kind of sad ones, but happy Halloween, I presume. You are actually very accurate on that. Good job, sir. First, I just listened to the latest chapter of World Triggered My Heart and Back Door at full volume through the stereo system in my dad's car. How does that make you feel?
Did it make him want to subscribe?
He didn't mention if his dad was in the car with him. I'm assuming that he was driving his dad's car and just played it through. I've always assumed nobody listens to us, like, without headset or, like, without, like, being in the privacy of their own home
we
or something
use
like that.
Foul language for people to be listening to us in public.
I listen to and know a lot of podcasts that will, like, specify, like, hey, this episode might have some vulgar language in it. So if your children in the car, like, make sure to, you know, skip past this part. I'm always like, there's nobody with kids listening to this podcast, I assume, but this is just because I assume that there's nobody beyond Mike. A carbon copy of myself just littered across the world who are doing this. Like, I'm like, no,
oh God,
married people
of Chris's
aren't.
No.
Yeah, I'm like, no women listen to this podcast. No married couples listen to this podcast. No black people listen to this podcast. So I'm always just, like, curious to the idea that there's, like, somebody listening to us at work who's just like, oh man, are they going to stop talking about, like, cum at this point or hand chops or whatever? Like,
My girlfriend occasionally listens to this podcast, and I still can't imagine couples listening to it.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Second, have you ever told anyone about something that happened in a manga or anime that left them completely shocked or in awe?
I mean, that's my life.
I have a couple friends that don't follow certain manga anymore that every so often I'll blow their mind with something. But, you know what? There's something that's unrelated to manga and anime that I actually want to bring in here. I was doing some WoW leveling with some friends the other day, and one of the people we were playing with reads comics, and the topic mm-hmm. of Reed Richards came up, and we were talking about how Reed Richards is kind of a dick. Yeah. And he brought up, he's like, yeah, I think in some issue it was mentioned, like, offhand Reed Richards had the cure for cancer, like he made it, but he didn't release it because it would be deemed, like, too dangerous for the world to have. And, like, I was baffled by that, like, laughing, and he followed up by the end, like, and I think he also developed a program that kept pedophiles from contacting children online, but he didn't release that one either. And I haven't been able to find any, like, verification of this. He swears that he read it in a comic at some point, but my mind is absolutely destroyed from the notion that
Reed Richards, he's a hero.
Like, just the notion that he was, like, cancer. This cure for cancer is too dangerous. I can't release this. And I've actually heard someone give a logic reason to that. They're like, well, the Marvel Universe has, like, a logic that if cancer were cured, some other incurable disease would have to come that would then be even worse than what cancer does. Like, it would melt your flesh or something like that. But I can't fathom why he would be like, I've developed this program that keeps pedophiles from contacting children. And he's like, but this is far too dangerous to release into the world. No good can come of this.
Reed Richards is like, I've developed a means to help firefighters to more safely rescue people from burning buildings, but it's too dangerous. Let them burn.
The chance for this to be misused is too high.
What if a villain were to use it to safely go back into their secret base when it was burning down?
Like, what possible evil could come from a program that keeps pedophiles from contacting children? Nothing!
I can only imagine it was like, It must have had something to do with, like, internet censorship or some bullshit. You know, something that was a much bigger catch-all than specifically prevents pedophiles from contacting children.
I have no idea. This is where, because a couple people have mentioned in the past, like, hey, I'm a Marvel fan, or hey, I'm a DC, like, guru master, if you need a consultant. This is where I need a Marvel consultant. If this exists, if this is actually real, I need you to tell me which comic it's from, because I have to find out if this is real, because it blows my mind that he would say no to either. I know about the Black Panther thing, because I know I've already been getting emails about that. I know there's, like, an issue with Black Panther where, like, Wakanda's like, we have the cure for cancer, but we're not giving it to you. But I need to know if Reed Richards does it, and his logic is like, I can't release this. There's too much potential for evil to use this. All right.
It's different for Wakanda because they're this isolationist nation. You know?
Yeah, I can.
Reed Richards is a fucking celebrity superhero.
Yeah, I can kind of understand it from the Wakanda perspective. It's still douchey, but I can understand their logic behind it. But like Reed Richards being like, "There's too much. What happens when you open Pandora's box and you can't close it? Everyone would have the cure for cancer. The world." No one would be dying of cancer anymore, and there'd be no way to stop it because of my actions.
No one would ever be able to talk to children online.
Look, why do you think this is potentially evil?
Oh boy.
How can you be this smart and so dumb? Also, why did you need to keep the program for your children? They're gods!
Next question comes from Jack Lebrano. Deer cursing at the sky and screaming, "Why, ruler of time, and Rollo in the deep?
Do you have my heart and soul?" D.
Got a couple of questions for you, too.
Sweet.
Recently, or by your perspective, 1 to 2 months ago, Bleach is rumored to actually be ending this year.
I don't buy
I'm
it.
I'm aware that Nick's love for Bleach died many years ago, like Unohana, and there's no way it can ever redeem itself at this point. That being said, would you still give the same tribute you gave Naruto and Inuyasha? No, we would never do that, something like that. Never. No.
Yep.
Specifically for Chris, thanks to the previous Q&A of June, I have now started watching Boardwalk Empire. I'm now meeting Gip?
Jip.
Jip?
Jip. Jip. Jip Persetti.
And he's just as fun to watch as he said he would be. I was wondering, who are your favorite Boardwalk characters and why outside of Jip?
I love Richard Harrow. That dude is just one of the most sympathetic and sad characters in the series, but so happy when you actually see him, like, come through. Also, he just has that great voice. Like, half of his face is essentially, like, fucked up. So he talks out of half his mouth like this. And it's, he's such a sad character, but one who really, like, endears himself to you because he's a good person. I like Nucky a lot, too. Like, he's a complete shithead, but I do like that you do see him throughout the series.
Hey, didn't you name your horse Nucky?
I named, a battle wolf or something like that we had in D&D at one point.
Yeah.
He's a great character, too, because you do get to see some struggles, some potential he had to maybe turn things around, and, there's a lot of really great characters. Chalky's great, Van Alden is great in the first season where he's just so unhinged. That dude was like a real, it was Michael Shannon playing him, who is known now for how intense and like crazy he can be. And that dude had such an up and down first season where like one episode he'd bust in and he was a prohibition agent. So he'd like bust in and shut down like a big operation. He'd be like, man, this dude's so cool. And then the next episode he'd be like strangling himself with his tie as he whips himself in the back looking at the picture of a 16-year-old girl, and you're like, this dude's so weird. This is so up and down. One moment you're the most admirable character, the next moment you're just so weird. I think Richard's my favorite. I could definitely note off the top of my head, but just about everybody on that cast has great moments.
Okay. This next question might need a little bit of explanation from me.
Eddie is also a great one. He's Nucky's butler, and he has some of the best comedy in that series. There's one episode where he's just knocking on Nucky's door, and Nucky's like, "Knock like a man!" And then you just hear like a boomf, boomf, boomf. And he's like, "You said to knock louder." He's like, "Well, keep the fucking door on the hinges." Just a great character with some hilarious comedy to how like awkward he was at times. Sorry, I interrupted you again.
I'm just saying this next question might require a little bit of an explanation from me.
Sure. what up, cool kids? Oh, wait, sorry, what up? Cool kids still say what up, right? Nick Y, ruler of time, Rollo T. Freeman, and Chris, wait, there's a second guy, Larios? Still love you, Chris. I believe that's a reference to the fact that the Shonen Jump podcast just refers to me twice.
He refers to that as that other podcast.
Yeah. Question one, mostly directed towards Nick, but Chris is more than free to answer as well, since you're a fan of OSW Review. Who are your boys in wrestling? For those of you who don't know what a boy is, unsuccessful, meaning they didn't capture any major titles, unpopular, meaning you must not be respected in general or have hope for the future, and untalented. There's a certain cringe factor. You have to be a little ashamed to admit you're a fan.
Essentially, so, your favorite for example, genres. Right. So, you couldn't say someone who's held a major world title, which is like WWE title, WCW title, or IWGP Heavyweight Championship. Mm-hmm. TNA title, who gives a fuck, you know?
Yeah. Especially like early TNA, because technically you couldn't say R-Truth if that was the case.
Right. R-Truth is actually my boy. R-Truth is one of the major reasons that I got into wrestling back when he was doing his heel run in 2001.
Yeah, that must have been like right when you started.
That was right when I started, and he's the reason I actually kept on watching Raw week to week, was because he was amazingly entertaining.
He was so crazy in that.
Mm-hmm.
He actually, you know, because didn't he come out in like a fucking Confederate, like, soldier uniform at one point?
Yeah, and insulted his home state because they were all a bunch of racists. And Jerry Lawler's defense for this was, that was a long time ago.
Nobody here still owns slaves. Forgive them.
I do! You shut up, random racist in the crowd.
Well, quiet you. You should really not be announcing that so loudly.
That is actually illegal now.
You should keep that under your hat.
No one in North Carolina is racist anymore. And even though, like, he's just doing, you know, like, stupid comedy stuff with Goldust now, occasionally he still does something that does make me laugh. But seriously, like, God, he is so bad. He's not a good wrestler, and he's done so much shit comedy in his career. I don't know, do you have anybody like that?
I've had a couple throughout time. I mean, in one way, I'd almost say Shelton Benjamin, but I think he did have hope for the future. He never won a world championship, but I think he was a little above that level.
Right.
But I would say, like, Fandango.
Yeah.
He falls into that.
Well, it wasn't, I would have said, yeah.
And I still kind of enjoy him every time he shows up. Even that same way for, Tyler Goodlooking.
Tyler Breeze.
Tyler Handsome, whatever his stupid name is.
Tyler Breeze. I don't think that you can even consider him a boy, because he's too talented a wrestler, honestly.
He is, but it's still...
He's legit good, it's just that, and he's good at playing his character, it's just that he's gonna be a jobber for life.
Yeah. But yeah, I think, Fandango certainly fits into that for me.
Mm-hmm.
Question two. Who would your manga boys be? Try to use similar criteria. No main characters... Have to be seen as general jokes, though not intentional jokes like Buggy or Zongi. Every Straw Hat is excluded for being boys since they're all respected in general, as is Rock Lee for some reason. Oh, for the same reason.
That's a hard question to answer. Blockhead does explain, like, Elfman is one for him. I know that you like Elfman, but you're kind of getting sick of him being completely useless.
Yeah, but aren't we almost... I feel like that was a question we've gotten before, that's essentially, like, who are our favorite Chad-like characters? The characters just get...
Yeah. Yeah, I think...
Because Chad would be that for me. Bucha, in a way. But he does finally get redeemed at the end, so I can't give it that completely. In a way, I almost feel like Kid from Ice Shield was like that, because he never got to truly redeem himself. He was made the starting captain of the USA team.
He was made too cool, though.
But I always found a way, he was made the starting captain of the USA team, or the Japan team, and never actually had a play where he got to show off. Like, it was actually Haruma who came out and had that big play, like, whenever, like, any big quarterback
here, we'll be two quarterbacks now.
Yeah, and it was like, when does Kid actually get to show that he's a great quarterback? But yeah,
he did do, I think, a super high speed pass at one point, but that was it.
Yeah. And could be a suggestion, but do you ever have any plans for doing Berserk for WMR? It's a series that got me into anime and manga in general, so I thought I'd ask.
It's definitely possible.
It's absolutely possible. I don't know when we do it, though, because that's a really long series. So
it is really long.
If we do it, I'm sure.
We probably have to split it into chunks, like by story arcs or something.
Yeah, similar to how we're doing JoJo's and Pokemon.
Mm-hmm. Next up from Squeeploob. Hi, why Roar of Time and Roll Out? I have a couple more questions for you. One, if one of your listeners wanted to recommend a manga to you, but it's no longer in circulation, and it's so obscure that it doesn't have a fan translation, how should they send it over to you? We don't have, like, a P.O. box that we have given out to people or anything, so...
Yeah, I might look into a P.O. box again.
We might end up doing something like that. I mean, as is, we don't really deal with enough suggestions, I think, to do it, but...
Between this and people who have said they've actually wanted to send us things, mm-hmm. I'm considering it. The first time I looked at it, it seemed actually like surprisingly expensive for what I thought, but I may just not have been looking into it closely enough, so I'll look into it again.
Number two, I'm not well-versed in pro wrestling, so I'm sorry if I get something wrong, but I want to ask, say there's an alternate universe where mostly everything's the same except the writers for your regular series are now bookers for the WWE. What sort of angles do you think they'd make up?
Oh, man.
This is a hard question to answer because a lot of writers have gone into booking stuff for WWE anyway. Well, it's just that so many of them don't stick around for very long.
Well, think of it like this. What kind of storylines and angles do you think we'd get out of popular manga artists? Like, I feel like if Kubo were a booker for the WWE, no one would get built. Every feud would just be spur of the moment except for the random three really kind of shitty people that he just pumps for no reason, like his Mayuri, essentially. Mm-hmm. Somebody who's like, I don't know, this dude's not heroic. Why does he efface? I don't get it. Fairy.
Why does Randy Orton keep on getting pushed?
Fairy Tale is a constant battle of good versus evil that ends with the good guys winning and one member of the bad guy, like, stable becoming good until the point is where there's like an 89-11% ratio of, like, faces to heels in the company, and it implodes on itself.
And also we go back to Attitude Era fan service.
Oh, yeah. It would be all over the place. Oh, Great would just have crazy amount of, like, stupid spectacle everywhere. It would be, like, essentially nothing but Attitude Era, like, Undertaker sacrificing Stephanie McMahon every week. With just huge gaps of logic between the actual fights.
Undertaker's promos would not be any different, though.
Yeah.
He'd just be, just be talking about the Lord of Darkness and the Devil and Satan and Sacrifice and Evil and the and Master. And
yeah, he just hit on, like, six keywords over and over again.
It's the same thing he already does and has done for 25 years.
Yeah, but now he's crippled.
Yes. Unfortunately. Yeah, that about covers it, honestly.
All right. Questions here? I don't see a name, so... Pulaski.
Polakowski.
Polakowski. I have a random and probably bizarre question concerning the difference in mediums, but here it is. Have you ever read the book series 39 Clues? No, because fuck books, and as our Y Ruler of Time has told us, forget what they taught you in school, always read right to left. The point is about how the book is made. It's not by over author. It is sort of hot potato of series with a new author of the week or whatever decided where the characters go, what they do, who they meet, and stuff while probably adhering to the most barest bones of outlines possible. Do you think this would be possible in manga? Have a set group of characters in an amorphous setting that has semblance of an overarching story, similar to One Piece's Finding One Piece, that is given a new author every week. Having a different artist every arc would be a bit overwhelming, so let's just say there's only one. I don't think it's possible, but by gods, I would like to see it.
It's already happened. It's called Western Comics.
To go with it in a manga sense, I think it can be... I don't know if I do week to week. That's a bit jarring. Because I know what you mean with comics, but even comics still have the same... writer on them unless it's like a bad book or so. Like if it's let's assume it's a successful book, they still keep the same writer on it at least for a couple of months, because comics themselves don't even come out weekly. Like,
it's not week to week, it's arc to arc, Chris.
Yeah. So
you do one story arc with one author, and then you do another story arc with another author.
Oh, then yeah, it would just essentially be...
comic books.
I guess I'd kind of be interested in seeing it done, like, once in a manga format, but I don't know. I never care for those ones. It's part of my issue with comic books is, like, I hate to get invested in a story, then a new writer comes along, and they've changed things in a way that, like, takes away from my initial enjoyment of the series or what I, you know, read it for or watched it in the case that I'm more familiar with. So, I don't know. A second and probably less crazy question would be for Chris. Seeing as Kingdom Hearts 3 will apparently have a good percent of the Marvel Universe in the game, what do you think would be some interesting manga worlds to be introduced in the game? I hadn't heard that actually they were adding Marvel. I still don't know if that's confirmed. Also, at this point, I still don't think Kingdom Hearts 3 is ever going to come out. I feel like that's just a story they tell you as they release more and more unrelated spin-off series that just make the world more complicated and confusing. But for manga worlds, One Piece...
Kingdom Hearts 3 release date set for April 2017.
Yeah, but I feel like it was also set for December or something like that. I feel like it's been pushed back quite a lot. And I'm still not completely sold on that it is coming out. It's just one of those, like, I'll believe it when it's actually out sort of deals. But One Piece would be, like, an obvious one. That'd be a simple one to go with. Bleach, honestly, would probably be a pretty easy one to work with, too. I feel like the worlds, like, Hollows themselves already are kind of, like, heartless. They wouldn't have to do much, like, modification in that. Other manga worlds that would work. Maybe, like, Rurouni Kenshin? Be kind of a different aesthetic from anything else they have. I don't know. Be interesting, though. He also recommends World Trigger, which would be kind of fun, but I feel like part of the fun of World Trigger is how specific powers work in that. And I think you wouldn't be able to really utilize that too well in Kingdom Hearts because it has to, like, grind everything down into a Keyblade and spells. But it'd still be interesting to see, nonetheless. A JoJo world would be funny, but it could never work, but I would love to see that.
Nah.
And final question that I don't really feel into asking, is there a series that just epitomizes the battle manga genre? The one series where the characters aren't great, the plots are pretty dog stupid, the designs aren't the greatest, but goddamn, those fights are just so much goddamn fun.
Kingdom. It wasn't, like, a bad series in those elements, but I remember, you know, the only things that we could remember, I was like, yeah, when they're fighting, it's fucking awesome, and I don't really remember the rest of it very much.
I almost think to, like, March Awakens Romance, I think was the name of it. That was just a battle manga series. I don't even know if the fights were particularly that memorable, but it was literally... Everything in that manga was just a setup for more battles. Like, there was no real in-between time. It was just battles, new power-ups, battles, new power-ups, battles.
Isn't that the one with, like, the living mace thing?
I think, yeah, that is it. And it has, like, different forms it gets, essentially. It, like, unlocks. Or he gets to grant wishes as time goes on and add new powers to his mace or things like that. I thought it was dog shit at the time. It's also done by the same dude who did Flame of Recca, and Flame of Recca is also another series that's kind of shaped like that. Just a lot of battle manga premises just thrown one after another. Right. So yeah, there we go.
Next email, again from Bulikowski. First question, if you could add a supplementary addition to any sort of franchise, TV series, or movie, what would you choose? An example would be a non-essential addition to WWE characters. I don't really know what that would be. Maybe a sheet of monthly series that's every individual arc focuses on different... I don't know how you would do that with the WWE characters, but okay. Is there a supplement to a series that you would like to see, basically?
I'm guessing what they're referring to maybe is like how Marvel's trying to put out the Damage Control series. It's just supposed to be about like the cleanup crew that has to like clean up after every like big Marvel attack. Like just some like almost spin-off of a existing franchise that might be interesting.
Side stories, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm assuming it's referring just to manga in his question.
I go. Well, no, because he says any sort of franchise, TV series, or movie.
I honestly couldn't tell you. I can't think of one that springs to mind immediately.
Hmm.
Yeah, I apologize. I really can't think of one that comes to mind, honestly.
It's too broad a question, sorry. second one. What series can you think of that had fanservice that was used in a way that didn't just feel like fanservice for the sake of fanservice, where it could be argued that it was part of the plot or character? Well, if it's if it's for the plot or character, then it's not actually fanservice. If you know what I mean.
Yes.
Fanservice is fanservice. It is something that you just give to the reader just because they want to see it, even if it doesn't fit with anything. Some of the people who have criticized Fairy Tail in recent communications with us have said, oh, you know, Kira's just doing fan service. Not just in terms of titillation, but he's just giving his fans what they want to see, even if it's not paced out properly. So fan service for the sake of fan service is only ever, it's just fan service. It's, you know, a redundant description. If you're talking about, like, okay, titillation that has a point to it aside from just that, then yeah, there's plenty of examples of that. He mentions Empowered, which the superhero heroine is, her power is that her suit is easily torn and shredded and stuff. So, yeah.
I've heard it's good. I've never actually read it, though.
I've heard it's good. Yes. Yeah, having, you know, sexual stuff, having titillation in series is not always just fan service. It can, you know, we've talked about how Shokugeki no Soma, the fan service in it, is also funny a lot of the time.
Yes.
But there's plenty of examples of that, honestly.
Yeah. I think there's almost too many in the main.
There really are. It's just that for as many examples as there are of that, there are far more bad examples, so.
Yeah. Questions here?
Hey, look, Tropical survived.
Tropical. Hey, Nick, whatever happened to Bleach? It turned into a dumpster fire. That's what Freeman... And Chris, Nisekoi wrapped up its final arc in 1 year. What the fuck, Kubo, you couldn't finish in 4 years, Larios? Given that this email will probably be read after the potentially disastrous conclusion to Bleach and Weekly Shonen Jump, I have some questions in regards to that, as well as the future of WMR. Given that you guys have been doing this lovely podcast for half a decade, I was wondering something coming... I've been wondering something coming up in the 6th anniversary of WMR. Do you guys miss the Attitude Era of WMR in the same way John Cena misses it for wrestling?
I don't know if John Cena misses the Attitude Era. He wasn't around.
He might have, like, said it in, like, a nostalgic sense, like, oh, the Attitude Era or something like that. Do we miss the Attitude Era of WMR? I don't know what the Attitude Era of WMR would have been when podcasts were shorter, I guess.
I don't. Got the show. Yeah, only had to do 2 hours of content a week as opposed to, like, 3.5.
I remember when we used to only do 1 hour, under an hour. Yeah. It was, like, a big deal, and I was like, holy crap, this podcast
is over. Oh, my God, we went over an hour. We have to hurry.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess that would be the only thing to pine for. But, no, I mean, I like where we are now, and I like the old stuff, too. I don't necessarily know. I don't think we've jumped the shark, but we're not the ones to say that. Related to that, since I know Nick speaks at least two languages, known across the world as Spanish and English... and in USA as American and Mexican, and Chris also engages in some dual language tango then and there. I was wondering if you ever wanted to pick up a third language that is not common in the US.
Tropical then goes on to go, I know that the easiest answer would be to go for Japanese because of popular stuff. Honestly, like, if I could pick up a third language, it would be that because I encounter it a lot. And would like to just be able to understand it without having to try and work out, like, kono wa... What's that fucking word there? Hang on, let me put it in Google Translate. What the... there's, like, four options for this word. God damn it! because I encounter it enough.
Yeah, I would agree. If I had, like, a choice to immediately learn a language, it would right now be Japanese. But I'd also really like to learn German. I have a lot of German roots, too, with my family, and I think that'd be a really interesting language to learn. As it is now, my knowledge to German is limited entirely to death quotes from villains in Wolfenstein 3D. So the only thing I could say in German is, on my God in Himmel, which is my God in heaven, which I believe is what the evil doctor scientist in his mech says when you kill him.
Well, and also there's Der Weiser und der Tafel.
Yeah. In regards to Patreon, even though it's been a tremendous success thus far, do you guys have ideas on how far you are planning to increase the amount of contributions? Obviously, that'll depend on how much WOMR audience increases over the upcoming ideas, but do you have an idea on how far you would like it to go? Like, in 2 years, should we be looking to a 2,000 stretch goal for the podcast? You know what? It's something, a logic I take where, you know, we have a lot of big ideas that we want to do with the show, and the idea is that, you know, as we can continue to build it, those ideas get more and more ambitious, and I would never, you know, as long as the podcast is still something we like to do, I would never want to take it to a point where I'm like, nope, we have everything we want to do, we never want to strive to anything more. So, you know, we absolutely have ideas. I have some, actually, I need to put on the Patreon, and we have plenty of more right now that are, like, in the banks that we're just like, eh, maybe that's a bit ambitious right now, and we'll hold on to that one. But yeah. All of them are within the interest of building the podcast into something bigger and cooler.
We have had talks about doing some stuff in the future, but yeah, we're not just sitting on our laurels at this point. Mm-hmm.
As an aside, would it be possible to include relevant links to the podcast and YouTube subscription? So the Patreon link, the ones to Podbean, the iTunes one, the Twitter accounts and whatnot, I mean. I honestly, I should. It's just something where I'm really tired at, like, when I'm doing that, especially because...
Fine, here's the timestamps.
It sounds like I'm being lazy, and part of it is, but it's to the point now where after audio editing, I now don't get to start rendering the podcast until essentially the next day, because I still work. So it's just to the point where I'm like, I just need to get this up, and I want to forget that. A lot of that stuff I could probably just, like, have in a template.
Yeah, have it down and just copy it into the description. Yeah,
which I should do, but... some stuff I think it would help if I didn't have to worry about, like, a full-time job and things like that. I could be able to do a lot more of that, like, specific stuff of things of that nature. But, no, there's some good ideas to maybe add. And as this email will probably be read after both Bleach, Nisekoi, and possibly Toriko have come to a close, provided nothing insane happens, I have to ask, is it incredible how it was a rom-com that ended up having the best preparations to end on time, while Bleach ended up wasting months of time on fights like Chicken Lily versus Mayuri and a Giant Hand, and Zaraki versus Gremmy, and everyone versus Gerard for fucking ever. Like, holy shit, Kubo was not thinking how dragged out this final arc was becoming. Yeah, I don't think you ever really were under... I don't think any of us were under the perception that Kubo had much of a sense of story control, that he ever really had, like, much of a tight narrative on how long his stories were going, so...
Okay. Next up from Shockwave72, hello, why Spider-Man can only be redeemed if he takes his shiv to Froze's face, rot, and Rolo insert joke about a certain female body part exploding from World Trigger's asteroids and eating Tsukasa's food, tea. I don't get that second one. Few questions that I hope can be somewhat entertaining. Number one, how can Yuya from Arc 5 be better than Yuma when he's clearly dumber? The immortal line, it's not a business, it's a show business. Okay, Yuya's gimmick is that he's a showman. Yuma nearly drowns in the first episode in a school pool. That's how stupid he is.
It's pretty dumb.
He's fucking stupid, okay? He doesn't know how the game works. He has to have the rules explained to him by his magical partner, even though he's supposedly been playing the game for a long time because he has a full deck. He doesn't know how his own deck works.
That's
like he's fucking stupid, okay? Yuya at least knows how he should do basic things. He's just kind of naive and caught up in his own world and suffering from, you know, personal problems involving a dad who's not there for him. Anyway. Number two. Who do you think would win a... This is a really interesting question, actually. Who do you think would win a four-way Shokugeki from Cutthroat Kitchen, hosted by Alton Brown and judged by Soma, between Alice, Erina, Megami, and Nakumi? I think it would be Alice, personally. I think that she would be able to adapt to the more bizarre rules of Cutthroat Kitchen. Have you ever watched Cutthroat Kitchen?
I have not.
The way the Cutthroat Kitchen works is you start off with $25,000, and you end up taking home however much is left that you don't bid. And at various points in the competition, it's like three times per round, and each and one person's eliminated per round. So it goes from 4 to 3, then 3 to 2, then 2 to the winner. And there's like 2 or 3 bids each round for a sabotage, where people are trying to outbid each other, and then whoever wins the bid gets to use the sabotage on somebody else. And it could be something, you know, mundane, like you get to take an ingredient from someone else's basket after they've already rushed out of the kitchen, to all of the cooking must be done inside of this tiny pot, or all of the water that you use for your dish must be harvested from these coconuts. Stuff like that.
Kind of douchey. I was originally going to say Megumi, because I'm like, she'd probably be really good at shopping on a budget and doing that. But yeah, after you said that, or the like sabotage, so yeah, probably be Alice. Although I don't know who's Nakumi.
American flag bikini girl.
Oh, okay. Then yeah, it's
still be Alice, even but... in the question right there.
Gotcha.
Oh, God. Number 3. As of this email's date, Bleach is ending in 4 chapters. Was it due to it being canceled, or did someone higher up finally say enough is enough? That's basically the same thing. And yes. Yeah. Question 4. What's going to happen when Boa Hancock sees the going Luffy Senpai?
I don't know.
That's a good question. I do think that it will probably be addressed at some point, though. I don't know. I can't imagine Hancock and Bartolomeo not crossing paths in some capacity, mm-hmm. based off their shared obsession. Number 5, if you had to build a deck of a Yu-Gi-Oh deck for each other, what would be your preferred style? Now, I think that we're talking in terms of, like, not a deck that we prepare for each other if then we had to duel each other, because then I would be like, here, Chris, have this Queen Bird deck.
The idea being that you're just building me the most garbage deck possible. I'm like, oh, it's like a Harpy's Dragons deck.
Oh, wow, look at all these high-level monsters. Yes, which you will definitely be able to summon. In terms of what I would actually give to you, though, I think that I would actually give you Performer Pals, which are Yu-Gi-Oh's deck. They're based around, like, the different kinds of entertainers, but they're also a very fast-paced and very straightforward deck based around a lot of just throw a bunch of monsters out and have them rush. So I consider you a very entertaining guy, so there's that, and also it would be a deck that I think that you would be able to handle.
Thank you. It was a compliment with a quasi-backhanded compliment at the end, but I'm still just taking it purely as a compliment.
Well, I know for a fact that if you have a straightforward enough deck, you will fucking wreck me, so...
I can't answer this for Yu-Gi-Oh! Because unfortunately I just don't know enough about the archetypes nowadays, and I don't even remember the archetypes back then. I'll turn this into Hearthstone, because I do know the archetypes from that.
So I'm not going to understand it at all either, so
yeah,
great.
There's a current deck right now. It's a Control Priest, which is normally considered not very good, but it's a patient, slow style, but it has a lot of tricks to it that can give you a huge lead early on, essentially. And it plays a lot with diligently kind of predicting what your opponent will do and just having the right tools in your hand to tear away what they have until eventually you just have superiority of the board and everything else. You know, it's good at taking your opponent's card. It's good at resurrecting old minions to get their effects over and over again. It's a really good style for somebody who plays with a mental fortitude for the game. I think it would fit you.
All right, number 7. What guest is the end-all, be-all for WMR, the ultimate ideal guest?
I'd assume Oda, right? Like, if it was going to be, like, the ultimate guest on the show, it'd have to be Oda.
Oda or Toriyama.
Yeah. Or maybe even Ashihara. Maybe, like, in a more realistic sense, we finally just get him on.
Number 8. Finally, you're the landlord of a boarding house full of the most underused character from the recap, with Musi as the superintendent. Who pays their rent properly, and who tries to sneak out of it with different favors? I don't know, I think that they all just, like, quietly pay their rent and then go off to Tristine.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you need to actually tell me who's at the place before I could say, because there's too many, like, underused characters that I'm like, oh, who do you even go with? Because, like, Zonga, he wouldn't pay. He's a bum. Oh my god.
Much of this is not actually questions. There's no questions in this for Caster UK.
Okay. Yeah, this is a recipes in here. Yeah. I must have read it and thought there was a question at some point. Okay, so I'll just move on to the next one. This one, there is no name here, but it says, Dear Y Ruler of Dr. Pepper and Sprite T, I'm curious about your favorite One Piece openings. Mine is the 6-1 Brand New World.
I don't know if I have a single favorite. I mean, there are some that I do like. I mean, We Are is always a nice one. Jungle Piece, a fun one. I think it's called Hikari A, Toward the Light. Mm-hmm. That's also a nice one. But
We Are is great. I love that one. I love Crazy Rainbow Star. Jungle P is great. I actually really like the 10th anniversary We Are as well. We Are, I like a lot. I was where, what's the name of that game? Jew Warrior used to talk about it a lot. It's where you have like a panel of buttons and you mm-hmm. basically tap them in coordination with the song. It's usually like almost like a DDR game, but it's almost exclusively used with anime songs. But I remember at Reno where we were doing the second anniversary, there was a machine there. It had We Are on it, and I played that so fucking much while I was there. So I have a little bit of a special memory for that one too. Because I think I actually did it in combo with Justin at one point. But yeah,
God, I'm so upset that I missed that trip.
That you know what, Nick? Rewind this podcast. That's what really? I change. That's what I change in history. Nick gets to come along with us to Reno. That's what we do. So all I need is a time machine, Nick. And I'm not even going to bother with Conan O'Brien in tonight's show. I mean, if there's leftover time after I get you to Reno, I may still be like, Nick, I'm off with my time jetpack to go save the Tonight Show.
That was around the same time, wasn't it?
Ultimately, Nick, I'd stick with you, buddy.
Aw. All right, this next one comes from Zephiel Navarez. Dear YMCA Ruler of Time and Autobots Roll Out. What are your opinions on character deaths in a story? On one hand, a character's death can help show the gravity of the situation, but on the other, when you kill a character, especially one that is a main character, very prominent, do you take away the ability to tell any more stories that are revolving around or even involving them? I don't think that you should kill them just to kill them. You know, just to be like, and now the story is darker and more serious. I think that's a cop-out. I think that, you know, if you're going to kill someone off, it should actually be for a reason. And I think that if you're also going to kill someone off, that there should be a sense of completion to them. Not in the sense of, oh, all the stories I've ever wanted to tell with this character are now told. But in the sense that it should feel like you've told a story with them already, or the story you were telling with them was leading up to their death. You know, they should feel like an actual character died.
I think it comes down to a little bit of what kind of series it is and how death is executed in that, because a series like One Piece, I would say, like, a very different kind of reasoning to than, say, like, the Song of Ice and Fire series, because there are a lot of deaths in that where the character's story isn't done, but a lot of the point of that character's story is kind of breaking tropes, you know, like the whole Red Wedding thing. A lot of important characters died at that, and the whole point was about how the world wasn't cheating to keep that character alive when they had made mistakes that led to that point. And that's a big thing in that series. So death plays into something like that a little bit differently, but ultimately overall, it just comes to, like, if you're going to kill a character and actually leave them dead, it just means that there has to be some kind of dramatic weight to it, and that character had their own story, and it's not just used to fuel someone else. You know, that's a great byproduct if it can, you know, if other characters react to it and that has some meaning, but it really helps just have some weight.
And the same question is, do you prefer powers that have limits and rules to them, or do you prefer powers that have nondescript limits? Essentially, in a story, do you prefer powers that have very clearly defined rules to them, or very nebulously defined ones? I think that having more limitations placed on powers leads to more creativity in how they are used. when you very clearly define stuff, then it doesn't seem like you're making it easy to use the power, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, like, he mentions JoJo in his example. JoJo, I feel like, is a combination of both, because the actual way stands exist has a lot of very clear rules. Sometimes that's played with. But, like, for example, one of the rules of stands is that if you kill the stand user, the stand dies as well. So that's a rule that isn't really, that's pretty static amongst the series. But stands themselves have a bit more nebulous room to kind of play with. Like, there are some stands that are just, you know, like, that have a physical form, and then there are some that are actual physical items. There are some that are, you know, actual locations. There are some that are, like, unseen things altogether. So that's where it's a bit more kind of weird and out there. But I do like it when there's more information provided and rules to play with other than just kind of, like, a nebulous thing. That's what a lot of ninjutsu and Naruto kind of felt like at times. There wasn't a whole lot of logic to some of it at points, but I think maybe Bleach might be an even better example of that, because there wasn't a lot of whole logic to that series in general, especially, like, you know, when you talk about, like, Reishu and Sero and things like that. They were kind of just all different variations of energy, but...
Next email.
Yeah. This is from... Hot Luffy. This person didn't put their email, but my eyes were immediately drawn to the image that was attached to it.
No, it's another one from Zephyo.
Is it? Oh, I thought I had accidentally not actually gone up one. That's my bad. So the next one has Hot Luffy in it. From Zephyo and the Varies, do you prefer villains that have more complex motives and backstories, or ones that are more straightforward and simple? For example, two villains I like are Ali Al-Shiez from Gundam Zero, who could be simple and very entertaining, or Kazundo Gouda from Ghost in the Shell, who could be classified as complex. Do you have a preference between them? I like both.
I like both, and a lot of it actually depends on the context that they're presented in, like the series that they're in, and the life that they're shown in.
Sometimes it also just helps to have a break, too. Like, sometimes if a series has a lot of really, like, complex and heavy villains, it's nice to just have something that's simple, clean, easy, and directly evil, you know? And then vice versa.
Yeah. Sometimes you just gotta have an Edamon, you know?
Yeah. Sometimes that really helps. What is your opinion on filler side chapters? What I mean is a chapter that focuses on topics rather than the main plot, such as chapters dedicated to either character development, side stories, or even a chapter used to take a break from the main story. I love these. I think these are absolutely fantastic. Any time that any story kind of slows down for a bit to take an important, like, look at its world, usually end up really being great. Like, one of the best Breaking Bad episodes is the episode where essentially the entire thing is spent having Walter chase a fly that's in his place. You know, and it all goes to show how kind of crazy obsessed and aggressive Walter has become, and how out of control his life has become, that he's letting a fly annoy him this much. But it's an episode where not a whole lot happens, but that's something that's really important. And when you get those sorts of things in manga where you have a chapter where, you know, even if it's just fucking Goku and Gohan going for a drive on the countryside or whatever, I think those can be really important. Now, if you're talking just in terms of filler, like, those are a bit different, and I don't care for those necessarily as much, but like a chapter, like the chapters of My Hero, where they just went around going to everybody's rooms, like, that was huge just in terms of helping us get a better understanding for some of the side members of Class A that we didn't really know about. So I love it immensely.
Yeah. Little breaks like that are great for helping to build up characters that often feel neglected. And also presents them in a context of, you know, this is what the characters are like when things aren't horribly intense and they have to focus on the mission or saving the day or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So I'll take the...
Hot Luffy question.
The Hot Luffy question. All right. A lot of these have to do with the fact that... I think this is from Ginger Straw Hat?
I believe so.
Yeah. They're going through a reread of One Piece. Hey, why? Where is Sniper Island? It's ended. It's in your heart, T.
I fucking love that. Every time it comes up, it makes me laugh.
Sniper Island.
That sentence alone perfectly personifies my friend Ray that you met. That sentence is just like, where's Sniper Island? It's in your heart. Just perfectly, like, encapsulates everything that's so weird and lovable about that guy.
Okay. Just got through my favorite arc, Water 7, but I noticed something this time, and I have some theories that are probably crazy nonsense, but hear me out. In Frankie's flashback, Tom is convicted and taken to Annie's lobby to presumably die. However, when they shoot him in Water 7, they only use tranquilizer darts and then haul him off. I found very odd, and it made me think this guy's genius single-handedly saved an entire island of people. Would the world government really just waste a talent on a death that no one is really going to know about or care about? Since no one's ever seen again after they go through the gates of justice, I think the government took Tom and have been forcing him to work for the government. I actually think that Tom is still alive somewhere. He's one of the few deaths that is left very ambiguous, and I feel like there are things that his character could be used to do. What do you think about this theory? I mean, that's definitely a possibility. People that, you know, were thought to have died in some flashbacks in One Piece have come back. I mean, the most obvious one is Sabo, although we stewed on that one for not nearly as much time as you're talking about Tom for. But I think that's an interesting idea.
Yeah, it's certainly worth considering. There's still a lot to Frankie's backstory that's not been revealed yet, so it's very possible that more of that will come to light. Maybe there's an entire sort of, like, mini arc or something like that dedicated to it, and maybe it does show up then. Although, Puffing Tom, I think was his name. No, it's just Tom. Puffy Tom was the train. Tom was pretty old back then, and that was essentially, like, 28 years ago or whatever, because I think Frankie was like 15 when that happened. He's 38 before the time skip, so he might be pretty fucking old now, though I guess fishermen maybe have a longer lifespan. But it's definitely, yeah, it's something worth considering. We never actually saw him die. But it might have just been a way to kind of keep it from being there. The ultimate point, though, is that Frankie feels responsible for his death, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Number two, with the revelation of Sanji's family, do you guys think that any other familial connections will be discovered? For instance, Frankie, who is said to have just been dumped off by a pirate, do you think we'll find out who? Also, Nami, Bellamere was her adopted mother, do you think her actual parents are alive, and will we find out about them? I also think that's a strong possibility. You know, keep in mind that, you know, of course, well, not just Sanji, we also found out about, you know, Luffy's family a fair ways into the series. It was a long time until we found out about Dragon and then about Roger for Ace. Mm. So yeah, I think that it's a strong possibility that we could find out about some of them. Sure.
I think,
like, we don't know anything about Zoro's family or Usopp's, I don't think.
We know about his mom. We know his mom died. We know Usopp is a member of Shanks' crew. So obviously,
right, of course. Yeah.
Obviously when they encounter Shanks, it'll come up there. So I'm sure we'll get to focus there. I honestly don't think we'll ever find out about who Nami's actual father mother was. I kind of hope we don't, because that was a little bit of what kind of made her story special. She was an orphan of war and just came to be adopted by this person who essentially in all ways, shapes, and form was her mother because, you know, she was an infant when she was grabbed in. So I don't know if there'd really be much to add. It's not like Nami's ever had angst over not knowing who her real mother is. She considers Bellamere her mother in every way. But Frankie's.
I don't think we're gonna get to it this time, but there's another question that I did read that suggests that maybe she is a daughter of Big Mom.
Yeah, I mean, I could see why that theory would be out there. I just don't think it really adds much to Nami's character.
Although I do think that it'll be kind of a cool twist that's the reason why the homies are scared of her is that it's not actually the newer cars because she's actually a daughter of Big Mom.
Hmm. But I would say Frankie's the big one. I think we're going to find out. It was specifically mentioned that his father was a big time pirate, so I can't imagine that would not ever be brought up again.
Yeah. Also during my reread, I had to go through Skia. I've long held that it's my least favorite arc of One Piece, but on a reread, it's not that bad. It's just not all that well paced. A lot of time it feels kind of overstuffed with too many plot elements, characters, and while Eneru himself is a fun, hateable villain, his vassals are very uninteresting and forgettable. A highlight for me is the flashback to Nolan and Kagura and the story of their friendship that I feel works as his own great story, but it's placed at such an odd plot point, that it really kills a lot of the tension that the arc had going into the final competition with Eneru, and I was wondering what you guys thought of Skype as a whole. Also, what do you think of the Nolan flashback? I personally really did not care for the Skype arc as I was going through it. Honestly, like, the Nolan flashback, I know that you've talked about and other people have talked about how sad it is and how effective it is. But honestly, it came at a point in the story where I was so dull and bored by everything that I really was just kind of skipping through it and it didn't leave an impact on me at the time. So I really don't care for that arc personally.
No, and I completely understand that. I've had my opinions on it change over time. I think I would actually disagree that the flashback came at a poor time, because I think that's really what happens with a lot of those flashbacks in One Piece. They come kind of right before the action really starts rising. Like Nami or Robin's flashback came right before, essentially right after, like, all of the Straw Hats had gathered up outside of Enies Lobby. So, like, that's just kind of the place where Oda puts those backstories. But the issue with Water or Skypiea was what he mentioned partially with the fact that there really weren't that many interesting characters on the villain side outside of Eneru. Like, there weren't a lot of interesting established things for them. They were all just kind of random people. Like, you try to name anyone in that group outside of Gedetsu, which is the guy who just did the Undertaker stare. He was only kind of interested because he was so stupid. like, I remember Om, and I remember the fat ball guy, but I couldn't even tell you who the other, like, the Trial of Strings Master was. I honestly can't even think of it. There were side characters that weren't all that interesting. Cypher, you know, didn't really leave that strong of an impact. The shame is that Skypiea actually really does have strong, cool moments to it. Like, I always thought it was cool when Eneru had made his prediction. He's like, only 4 people are going to survive this game. And that even included his own men. And at the end, it came down to Gon, Fall, Robin, Zoro, and Cypher were the ones who made it. And it had that cool moment where he's like, all right, you 4 will get to be my people who ascend with me. And all of them are just like, go fuck yourself in like one cool motion. I love when actually Cypher did that big, like, reject, and it's like, I'm destroying my entire body doing this, but it's to take down this, you know, beanstalk that'll let Luffy get up there. Like, there were cool moments that are very One Piece-esque, but I think it was also hurt partially because this was the first arc that it was really obvious that Oda didn't have something for everyone to do. Sanji and Usopp were basically put out of commission. They did get to do something in the arc, which is nice. They weren't completely worthless, but they were put out of commission. Nami kind of just rode around a whole lot. Robin's fight was against some person who just came out of nowhere and really only seemed important because he was trying to destroy our, you know, archaeology. There just wasn't very memorable points to it outside of Eneru himself in small moments, but it just didn't have the same cohesion that Alabasta did. It didn't feel as tight as Alabasta did, and it didn't feel as important as Alabasta because Eneru was just someone we had spontaneously met and was an opponent that only Luffy could beat because he just had the power that countered it. It's still a good arc. I've warmed up on it over time, but it's not as good as the 2 big arcs that bookend it.
And then there's a follow-up question. I've seen a lot of people compare Skypiea to Dressrosa, from the length of the arc to the highly emotional flashback in the middle to the enormous amount of characters, and even to a lot of the people, the overall quality of the arc. A lot of friends I have said that Oda's biggest stumble in terms of pacing a character since Skypiea. They say that Oda got rid of half the Straw Hats, just introduced more characters that he doesn't give enough time to develop. I can certainly see the pacing side of things, but I really enjoy Dressrosa for the characters like Doflamingo and Bartolomeo. What do you guys think of this comparison? And do you think a lot of the criticisms are justified now that the arc has been over for around a year now? I think that they're kind of neglecting... Your friends are neglecting some things. Like, I mean, we find out a lot about Law in that arc, and he was an established character from before that point. We, of course, build on an established villain in Doflamingo leading up to his defeat.
Probably actually the longest running antagonist of One Piece to that point.
The characters they introduced, a lot of them do have pretty strong build-ups, like Bartolomeo and a lot of the people who join as Luffy's generals. I mean, it was kind of weird to have them all that focused, but then of course we find out, oh, well, because they're joining Luffy and they're going to be his allies in the future, as opposed to all the people who are introduced in Skypiea, who stay up in the sky and never show up again.
Yeah.
So, I think that there are some strong differences in between them that do set them apart. And I think that the comparison is a bit unfair.
I know a lot of people weren't crazy about Dressrosa. I know some people had issues with it. I still think it was good, but I really can't even give like a final thoughts on that arc because I really think it can only be made once you read that entire arc like in a quick span as opposed to week to week, because this was the first major arc that I hadn't read in a big chunk, essentially. You know, none of the other ones, even Marineford was a smaller arc in comparison to this, so it's tough to, when you know, really judge it when you're reading it week to week. But I think there was a lot of really great parts to it. I know some people are like, I didn't care for the Gear 4 reveal, and I can understand that because it is goofier than some of Luffy's other transformations. But I think it did a lot of really great things. I thought the fight with Pika was really well done and really cool. I loved a lot of the characters they introduced. Bartolomeo is still maybe one of my favorite characters in One Piece ever. So I loved them, but I know why some people don't.
And for my last question, I want to ask, am I the only one who's weirded out by this? And there's an image of a sexy gender-bent Luffy. I mean, I'm not really weirded out by it. I mean,
you want to know what does weird me out about it?
Sexy figures are made for almost every popular, you know, anime character, so whatever.
Roll 63. But you know what does bother me about this? Gender-bent Luffy is wearing a jean skirt instead of jean shorts. And I'm like, what's the point? Like, with the way Luffy fights, why even bother wearing a skirt? Because that's just going to fucking go up all the time, right? Like, if he was wearing shorts, it'd be okay. But a skirt, that's just ridiculous. That's impractical.
Well, yeah, but she's still wearing an open shirt, though.
Yeah, but that's classic Luffy. This, though, that's just foolishness. That's going to restrict your movement more than anything.
Short to restrict movement at all.
Luffy, get
it
your
goes
shit together.
A third of the way down her thighs.
It's going to bother
She's
me.
She's made of rubber anyway.
I'm writing a letter to Oda right now. Dear Dickface.
Gets finished sending this letter. Oda responds back, I drew her to be sexy. Bite me.
Suck it.
You want to do maybe one or two more?
Yeah. Question here from Pheasant Tail. I was so honored that you guys not only answered my question, but added as part of the description. You have no idea how much that made my day. Well, thank you, and I'm glad that made your day. Thank you for listening. Question one. I regularly have trouble getting into Sanji as a character on account of how he treats Rimmen. That being said, he is absolutely fantastic in Water 7. In Enies Lobby, every bit of his dialogue with or about Usopp was gold, though he gets points off for not fighting Khalifa. And during the Davy Black games, Sanji's interactions with Zoro were at their most humorous, and even his weakness for ladies was less creepy since it was subdued and Nami was doing it out of her own prerogative. All in all, while Sanji has great moments throughout the manga, the Water 7 saga is the only time I can wholeheartedly enjoy him. So do you guys have any characters that were able to appreciate for a limited period of time? This excludes cases where you warm up to a character for the rest of the series. It has to have run its course eventually.
I mean, I think that Sanji would stop being Sanji if he didn't have his, and they've been focusing on this latest arc, you know, he wouldn't be Sanji if he didn't have that sense of chivalry to him. Maybe he'll be a little bit less perverted, but he's always going to have that special place for women in his heart.
I think Sanji's most funny when he's dumb with infatuation than anything else. Like, I love the message he leaves in Water 7 when it's like, Dear Nami Swan and the rest of you idiots. And it's like almost exclusively like a love letter on the side there. Like, that's where I think Sanji's hilarious.
Also, here's important information that you need to know.
Yeah. Who's a character that I turned around on?
I've got one, but it's not quite a proper answer. A lot of the characters in the Save Sasuke arc are really badass for just that one arc alone and never do anything important ever again. Like Kiba, Choji, to a lesser extent Neji. You know, they don't do anything after that arc is done. They just go home, never do anything again. Lee, I consider a little bit different because he was being built up until that point as a more important character, and then he just stopped doing stuff. So that's not, you know, an isolated incident of me liking him. But, you know, like Kiba before that point didn't really care. Neji before that point, oh, what a jerk. Choji before that point, what a useless asshole. But for that one singular arc, it was like, oh, they're so badass. and then,
Yeah, I'm trying to think of like a good answer for it, but I think the closest I could say is like Erza for a time early on in Fairy Tail I kind of liked, but that's almost more of a character who became something I disliked, because I don't think there was really a point where I disliked her before I started hating her again. So, yeah, I can't think of a really great answer for this one, unfortunately.
Okay.
And the second one here, at the time of this email's writing, the recently aired episode of JoJo Part 4 introduces Rat, a stand equipped with barbed darts that secrete a flesh-rotting serum. Needless to say, this is not an episode to watch while eating. Are there any powers in manga that you find particularly stomach-turning? Bonus points if the wielder of said power is a good guy.
Well, there is Shishikura who is introduced.
Yeah, I was going to say Meatball fits that pretty well.
And he's trained to be a hero, so there you go.
This is a weird one to mention. It's technically a spoiler for JoJo for you, but this is so long later on down the line, I'm not worried about it. But one character in Part 7 has the stand Hot Pants, which is like a... she's called Hot Pants. Her stand is called Cream Starter, I think. And it's like a handheld spray thing that when you spray it, it like emits flesh that you can like use to like recover from injuries from or do other things. But it like takes it from yourself essentially, which I always thought was weird. Like it's just a spray that shoots flesh that's like killing you. But, in addition, in Part 6, it's to protect against a stand that has the ability to turn anything it hits inside out. So to counter that, Jolene essentially makes her body into a Mobius strip. So anytime she gets hit, she just flips and it can never be truly reversed. But it was such a disgusting idea, like, that you get touched and your entire body just flips inside out. I'm like, oh, that's so weird. That always grossed me out in that one Halloween episode of Simpsons where it's like, don't worry, Bart. Everything's safe. Except for that flesh-eating gas that when you smell it, it flips your skin inside out. And I was like, oh.
No, let's do a little song and dance routine.
It's sleeping through the window. But yeah, there's a lot of them in JoJo. That's pretty gross. Shino can actually be pretty gross, too, if you think about it. Bugs that crawl through your body and, like, make a nest inside of you.
That's true, yeah. Nightmare. Let's finish up with one final email then from Michael Hurt. Hey Chris, I've only gone to Roll20 a couple of times to live out my roleplay fantasies that don't involve Osamu Kitora banging. There he goes. And Nick, why am I the ruler of time? Again, spins wheel of not very well thought out Shyamalan plot twist. Because I'm a feelings boy. Man, is that one of the more terrible lines to ever appear in a movie? Freeman.
It's a quote from something I'm not getting.
I guess because I'm a feelings boy?
Well, let me just highlight this and I'll find out. You continue on.
All right. Number one, going forward from whenever you read this, do you think that you can give certain characters specific weird voices when reading chapters? You could have Luffy's voice be Benzai. Listening to that chapter you did with that a month back just makes it seem more and more fitting. And heck, even Benzai has a slightly more serious voice whenever Luffy isn't saying something dumb or silly. So you think you can do that? I guess we'll take it under consideration.
Wait, what is this? We just want to give a Benzai voice to Luffy?
Yeah, that's the question/suggestion. Yeah.
It's interesting. I just don't know if that would be... Because the Benzai voice is just a bad voice of nothing. It's just him being mean and insulting and bringing up old Benzai jokes.
Can't kiss me, fatty!
Oh, I had a bean from Taco Bell. Now I'm pooping myself uncontrollably for weeks.
Why do you guys have to pay taxes on this stuff? That means a line.
You have to tip everybody. I don't do that. I tip no one. I take money from the homeless as I play rape games on my phone.
Number two, speaking of One Piece, would you be able to list your favorite warlords from least favorite to favorite? And I'm talking about the original seven Shichibukai, not the added ones like Buggy, Law, Weevil, or Blackbeard, but the original seven named after animals. Ha! Buggy and Weevil are named after animals! I think my least favorite is probably Mugekko, Moria.
I gotta actually write them all out so I could think of it. It's, Kuma. Yeah. Doflamingo.
Mihawk.
Mihawk. Boa Hancock. Crocodile.
Mm-hmm.
Gecko.
Jinbei was one of the originals, and he's not named after an animal.
Well, his name means white whale.
It does?
Yeah, that's what Jinbei means.
Huh, okay.
And, yeah, then Jinbei. So, Yeah, those are the seven. Of those, I'd probably put Hancock at number seven. I really don't care for her. She was kind of a disappointment to me. Then probably Gecko, but I'll be honest, here's where it actually starts getting really good, so now don't consider it an indictment of anything. Then I'd probably say Jinbei, Doflamingo, Mihawk, Crocodile, then Kuma. I really like Kuma. I love his design. I love his, like, interesting story, but, like, those top three are just almost interchangeable. Even the top four, you could say. I think all those guys are so cool.
I actually don't care much for Kuma, honestly.
I can completely understand that, too. Or, sorry, it means whale shark. Whale shark, not white whale.
Okay. Crocodile will be my number one, and then Jinbei. Gecko I'm gonna put at the bottom, and then Boa, and then Kuma. Then Mihawk in the middle, and then Doflamingo in number three.
Okay. I could see that.
Yeah.
Alright.
And lastly, it may be a while before these questions, but currently there aren't any new major series coming to Shonen Jump, at least the recap for a while, despite some major ones like Bleach and Nisekoi likely having ended at this point, and others in their supposed finale arc. What kind of manga do you think should now be in Jump? Another just an action series, a sports series, comedy series, or something else? It should always be a balance, and Shonen Jump always likes to have that balance. That's why, like, when you see a certain, you know, some series end, suddenly there's an influx of a whole bunch of different ones in a row that are trying to replace it. Like, a couple of years back, you know, a whole bunch of sports series had ended around the same time. So suddenly we got this influx of a bunch of different sports manga that all ended really quickly. And so a new sports manga came along in order to try and be the new replacement. And then that one didn't stick around. And so, you know, it just kept on going like that. It's something that I noticed in particular with sports manga because, like, you don't seem to see too many of them trying to join the magazine up until, like, Kuroko no Basket just ended. We better replace that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then, you know, Haikyuu got really big, and so it became less of a priority and stuff. It'll always be, you know, a balance like that, and there'll always be, like, it, you know, an effort to replace new series. That's why we've got Love Rush running in the mech, because Nisekoi's just ended. But at the same time, you know, we've got, you know, Amalgam of Distortion, and we've got Red Sprite, and series like that, you know, in an effort to replace Bleach or series like Bleach, where, you know, we've got to have a new action series and try and have a whole bunch of action series in there. So
I think Jump's really done good, especially US Jump, at kind of making sure there's a variety in there. I like that we have something different from everything else, too, with Promised Neverland, which is just like a cerebral story with very little action to it, but still a good amount of tension. I think the only thing I really wish our Jump had was a sports series. I really do wish Haikyuu was in the magazine, but I understand that it's tough to put that in, and they're probably going to be reluctant to do so unless nothing sticks from this, like, recent series of new manga, so...
Mm-hmm.
It's still going to be translated, which is awesome, and you can pick up the volumes, but I do wish there was just a sports series in the magazine. It would be, like, the one thing I wish we had.
Okay. That's going to do it. I guess we'll wrap up by saying thank you, everybody, for listening. Yeah.
Gotta have more than that, right? We can't just end on that. No. We're just done.
Remember, Chris, professional and short with our words.
That's right. You know? Concise.
Concise.
To the point.
Brevity is the soul of wit.
Never redundant.
Mm-hmm.
Not repeating ourselves.
Over and over again.
Always sticking to the point.
I am clear, concise, to the point. I am. yeah. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Weekly Manga Recap's Q&A episode for October. We're going to do our regular recording in a couple of days. Wednesday we'll, I guess, be talking about Emerging, the horror manga that was suggested to us last week. And so we'll carry on as Halloween month continues.
Yes, so that's going to do it, everybody. And what's like a funny thing to go out on, Nick?
So let me tell you about this moth that goes into...
Yeah, I was like, let's just recite the Norm MacDonald joke in... Gloriously
the moth goes to see a podiatrist.
Actually, here's another thing. I didn't mention it before. if you want to check it out, I think it's just like called like Norm MacDonald Saves the Interview. It's a clip of Norm MacDonald on Conan's like late show back, like it must have been super early in his run because it's an old clip. He looks super young in it, and it has what's her name from Melrose Place on it. And she's talking about how she's filming a movie. She just got done, and it's about to come out, a movie with her and Carrot Top.
And oh, God.
And Norm MacDonald, despite the fact that she's there and also the movie, just tense the entire interview just shitting on the movie. Like, he's like, ah, Carrot Top's in it. You know what they should call that movie? Box Office Poison. And she's like, I'm in the movie. Like, everyone's just laughing because it's so funny. But he just takes every opportunity to start, like, making fun of it. Then, like, Conan even gets the name and he's like, oh, what's, it's untitled yet. She's like, actually, it's called, Director of the Board. And he's like, ah, Director of the Board. Do something with that, you freak. And you just see Norm MacDonald. He's like, spelled B-O-R-E-D. Like, that's when, like, Conan has to, like, step away from the chair. He's just cracking up so much. I fucking love Norm MacDonald. Seriously, if you do not watch it, you have to give it a shot, because if you get it, you're going to love that man.
Okay, well, I've just found it on YouTube, so I know I'm going to be doing it for a minute. So, we're going to see you guys later.
Bye!
Bye!